Oh, hey there. I'm Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining are digital strategist Winna Mitchell.
Hello.
Journalist Margaret Wappler.
Hi there, Guy.
Hello, Margaret Wappler. You're still with us. You have not left us to go promote that book of yours?
Not quite yet. A couple weeks.
And the book is called Neon Green, and it's available for pre-order now, isn't it?
That's correct, sir.
All right. And academic and DJ Oliver Wang.
Hello, Guy.
Hello, Oliver. How's it going?
It's going well.
You seem very summery. Do you feel good because you're in shorts and a short-sleeve polo, or do you feel like you're just doing everything you can to fight off the heat?
Both.
Understandable.
And your shoelaces match your shirt.
Also, Margaret's wearing a dress that can be seen from space.
Yes. I'm semi-blinded at this point.
Pretty amazing.
We have a black light effect on it, so it's tripling the space factor.
Coming up on this week's show, we're going to be talking about weddings, the culture of weddings and wedding in culture. Plus, we'll each be sharing our latest jams. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or event have caught our attention this week. Margaret Wappler, what are you all about this week?
Oh my God, GOT. The finale was last night, and it is full-on matriarchy power. We have Sansa, fresh off of her revenge, finally gets Ramsay down. She's definitely in this position where she could become a little more schemey. Some kind of thing is happening with her and Littlefinger.
That look at Littlefinger was really just so full. And that moment of, yeah, Sansa... I've loved this season with Sansa so much because she's come so far from that little girl who just dreamed of being a princess.
Mm-hmm.
And now, now that a certain scheming queen is gone, that she could be taking the place as this more capable, Marjorie of the North, who actually, can stab in the back like Marjorie, but also stab in the front like a Stark.
Yeah. It's interesting to compare her to Marjorie because she's not quite as, canny and charming as Marjorie yet, but there's potential.
I mean, it was amazing. When I was with my friends before the show, there was usually they kill people in the second to last episode, and then you're just tying things up afterwards. Will anybody die? And then people died.
People died. Marjorie died. Loras died. Who else was in that room?
Oh,
the Tyrell
High
dad.
Sparrow.
The High Sparrow.
The Tyrell dad.
And
we managed to get a couple of other important deaths. Grandmaster Pycelle, Grandmaester Pycelle, fucking Tommen.
Tommen.
Crazy.
Walder Frey.
Walder Frey.
Very
taken
satisfying.
They killed Arya.
10 people last night?
They killed
1,000 plus.
And I mean, on some of them, I did feel
Chicago.
We maybe didn't get enough foreplay. Walder Frey was a little bit what's going on?
Well, I did have a feeling that little maid that was going around serving dinner, there was something up with her.
Yeah.
How many life Starks are left at this point?
We've got Sansa and Jon Snow and Bran.
And Arya.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But Bran may have become part of a tree yesterday.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell. He touched it, and then he warged and went into the dream world or whatever.
Got it.
So what happens since there's, this is the one who doesn't watch it. What happens now? Do we have them, Oliver on the Brady Bunch type situation, or a whole group of cousins going to show up?
I mean, in the books,
they do need some fresh blood, the Starks, to help them out.
Maybe they marry into a new family.
In the books, some random people show up in that fifth book, but they completely did away with them, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
I mean, do you feel like you want fresh blood, or do you feel like you want storylines to be reduced to something manageable?
I'm very interested in what's going to happen with Cersei. Okay, because now she is the queen. She's sitting in the Iron Throne. Spoiler. And all of her children are gone. And her children her children kept her from being totally evil.
Yeah.
And now that they're gone, she's got nothing barring her from being a complete psycho evil bitch.
Ew.
Oh, that scene with the septa.
Rhaegor.
Oh, my God. Pouring wine all over her and being like, shame, shame.
It was wonderful.
I've never even seen that happen in a bar late at night.
Wine boarding is a fabulous idea. Oliver, what are you all about?
So Sunday night was full of action on Twitter. We basically had three different camps. We had the Game of Thrones Twitter going, had BET Twitter, which I think we might be talking about in a second. And then I was watching the Copa America finals between Chile and Argentina. And I feel like, I don't know if you could have all three camps merging at some point, but I felt like this was very divided somehow. So, I was watching football. I've somehow managed to replace watching the NBA playoffs incessantly to now watching international football tournaments. So the Copa America is now done, but we are still in the middle of the Euro, the UEFA Euro Cup, Euro tournament, whatever, where today, or I guess yesterday by the time this airs, or 2 days ago, whatever, England has, which has had a rough time of it in many, many years, and very bad, very, very bad week. You know, England in general, between the Brexit and this, they lost to Iceland. Iceland, a country so small that their football, that their national team manager is a part-time dentist, as opposed to someone who's employed full-time, like England. A nation so small that 8% of their population attended the game, which is, I can't really quite wrap my head around that fact.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And then the other 80-whatever percent were in Hot Springs.
Yeah, the last
I'm listening to Bjork.
92%.
The last game Iceland played, apparently 99% of Iceland watched that game.
Let's be clear. Oliver is talking about soccer when he says football.
Yes, because speaking to the rest of the world outside of the U.S., that's what football means.
But here in the United States, it is soccer.
Right.
But also, the Chile versus Argentina game, a rousing 0-0 victory.
How did that work?
So bad that Messi, arguably the greatest player in the world, basically announced after that he was quitting international play because he has lost, at this point, one World Cup and three Copa Americas in the finals for Argentina.
Let's just take a moment
he still gets to kick a ball for a living.
That's kind of rough.
Let's appreciate rough. That this game, the most popular game on the planet, no one denies it, had a 0-0 game that people got excited about. And the answer is they won off of, like, penalty kicks after the game.
Yes. During the game, but after regulation was ended.
That's what I meant. after 90 minutes were over, right?
I mean, to put it in perspective, I've seen many a high-scoring football, American basketball game that are insanely boring to watch. So it's not as if the score indicates the quality of play. That said, I don't think anyone's going to call this Argentina-Chile game like an instant classic either, except for the fact that completely devastating to Argentina, which just cannot seem to win on the international stage to save its life.
Like, I have been forced to go to a lot of soccer games because my best friend's husband is a soccer journalist. And I will say, it is beautiful to watch and as compelling at times as a sunset. Like, it really is just like, this thing is going on. People are running around, balls are arcing, and nothing's going to happen for the next 45 minutes. Christian, do you have any strong defensive of soccer?
Yeah, I kind of like the international stuff more. It was really good to see Mexico lose 7-0.
Ouch.
Wow.
Why were you excited to see Mexico lose?
Because fuck them, dude.
Damn.
All right. Before this gets into Trump territory.
Yes.
Winter Mitchell, what are you all about this week?
Okay. Two things. First, I actually liked Kanye's famous video. Every time I try to read, no one put up an argument that much about it. I think we're reaching peak Kanye.
I can't even watch the video.
Like, we haven't achieved.
No, this is peak. I can tell because the murmur rose and then it went. I actually liked the video. It was on some Rick Baker thriller, American Werewolf in London type realness with like some sex doll added in, and like a Mad Max. I'm sorry, a Mad Magazine cover come to life. but I like the song. I like that he's controversial. I like that he doesn't give a fuck. I just think it was funny. So, I mean, I like it. People can come at me about it. But Lena Dunham today.
Oh, I don't know what happened. Tell me what happened.
God, she took to her Facebook and sat down and penned a very passionate argument on why this is it was like rape, the video. And that it is a trigger warning for victims of assault. and that Taylor to be prone next to Kanye, her largest oppressor, public oppressor, to have her naked without her consent is about as close to
because
rape.
it is a Taylor Swift lookalike who is in the video,
right? And I was like, okay, I'm not defending Kanye about anything, and I say this as an assault victim, but like, it wasn't that serious. I mean, they've been engaging in this like absurd child like playground argument for years now, to the point it's just like one of those third story narratives in like an episode of 90210. It's like, you know, they don't like each other. They're going to poke each other.
Well, there's also the weird relationship between Lena and Taylor, where she's sort of like Taylor's feminism guru. And
right.
Her boyfriend produced a bunch of the songs from
that's
the last
right.
album and
yeah,
stuff.
Right.
So it is an interesting collection of relationships.
It's an interesting collection of relationships.
I do think Kanye's whole thing is like high juvenile, right?
Sure.
Like his sensibilities and his ideas are juvenile as fuck. Mm-hmm. And then he delivers them in this very high art format, which I think tricks a lot of people into thinking there's deeper thoughts there than there are.
Right.
And I mean, to me, there's something there, that whole like sleeping tableau.
Which is based on a painting.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's high juvenile. You know what I mean? Like, it was sort of like a shot fired at her to put her naked next to him when she has said, like, don't fuck with me and I didn't sleep with you.
Right.
So I do think there is something boundary crossing about it. You know?
I think there's something boundary crossing about it. I don't think personally that it should be. She name checked Brock Peters as well.
Yeah.
That's why I said, you know, I'm not going to defend him for
right.
everything, but like, before you start bringing all that shit into it, like
right.
really take a look at it. We're still in the business of show. So if we're, he's going to go, he's also bringing like an artistic quality to it. He's very much a fan of fine art, and I love all the references he makes.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like that he brings that to it, because a lot of people have never even been to the Met. No one's ever been to like the Guggenheim or
if you're
or
a
the
brand,
Tate.
If you're a brand, people get to comment on it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I wish I could properly credit who made this tweet, but someone on Twitter basically said that we should pay Kanye to direct a remake of Dune, and I think that's a genius idea.
Oh my god! Oh my god! Like the beautiful idea.
Wait, why?
I would say.
Have you seen Dune?
Yes.
But all,
of course.
And also famously, there was that weird like Spanish or South American guy who they made a documentary about the Dune that he planned.
Oh yes.
And
but why Dune? I'm just curious. Why Dune?
Well, I kind of having never heard of this before, the idea that it is the splashy, sprawling thing where David Lynch and whatever that like that it is this.
Jodorowsky.
Jodorowsky, like that it is this epic mess that people have made.
Jodorowsky direct? Lynch directed it, right?
No, but Jodorowsky in the 70s
yes.
was working on one, and they made a documentary recently
okay.
about like the art and his plans for it. And that's an astoundingly compelling idea that is our thing that people go to as an exercise in splashy excess.
I've never even thought of having Kanye West in the director's seat, but that actually might be the best possible thing he can do in his next life if this whole music thing is not working out.
Let me just say, I feel like his ideas musically are not juvenile. I wish he would just stick to music at this point. I just
but
don't
he has to have a visual
his images.
But his, I love his images. That's the thing. I love his the way his mind thinks. This is a man who consumes way too much porn, cartoons. he watches a lot of like what are the like Crimaster films. Like he
I
has
know, Matthew
nightmares,
Barnes is his dude. But like,
yeah, like,
I should say that I'd rather if he does images, I just want him to back off of that kind of like sexualizing someone who doesn't want it from him.
Yeah.
I think like why do it? Why go for her? Just
think,
like
but
leave it.
Everybody
be.
Else has sort of been well. Yeah, maybe that might be too far, but everybody else has sort of been fair game, including Kim. So I think I felt liberated in it that like.
Well, I think I was also just pissed about visualizing Trump naked in that way.
Well,
really, I was like, don't
Cosby.
Do that to me.
Also,
give me a trigger warning.
Maybe the thing is
about that.
Is like sex and sexuality plays into a lot of stuff. And so we're very used to it being in play. But we sort of understand that like maybe in the same way that over the course of the past 50 years, we've rethought objectification and villainization when it comes to race.
Yes.
Like, we do need to think about that more mm-hmm. when it comes to gender, because we do kind of understand it is our right to have bouncing titties in any film we want. And
Megan Fox.
Like, think about what the titties mean. Are you going to talk to us at all the BET Awards?
So, really quick, went to the BET Awards last night. Amazing. The show, I still haven't even watched it because I was running around. But the one thing that I can take away from it, y'all can watch it on DVR because it was literally on four different channels. It was simulcast through all of Viacom's networks. Jesse Williams gave this rousing, amazing, bad fucking ass speech. Talking about, he basically put everybody in the room on notice. He also put everybody in the world who's not understanding of how to be woke and conscious on notice about where he was coming from. He checked people from left to right, gave a rousing bit of love towards Black women. I don't know. Do you have like a clip of it?
We've been floating this country on credit for centuries, yo. And we're done watching and waiting while this invention called whiteness uses and abuses us, burying Black people out of sight and out of mind while extracting our culture, our dollars, our entertainment like oil, Black gold, ghettoizing and demeaning our creations, then stealing them, gentrifying our genius, and then trying us on like costumes before discarding our bodies like rinds of strange fruit. The thing is that just because we're magic doesn't mean we're not real.
That Thank was you. Something to watch that, listen to it, hear it. I won't ever forget that. I will never forget that speech.
Well, it also just shows the value of some production and planning. Like, a lot of people try to have moments at an award show, but that's beautiful. Like, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, it was flawless. There was, like, nothing he said wrong. But I love, too, that they kept showing his parents, you know, and his mother is white and his dad is Black, and they both were just, like, tearing up. And there's just something so powerful about, like, the whole transference of that. You know what I mean? Like, his words and that kind of, like, swimming through his parents' eyes and white and Black communities. I don't know. I really thought it was beautiful.
To have Deborah Lee up there too, who's the president of BET, wearing her natural hair. I've never seen her wear her natural hair. Everybody is woke. obviously from the top down to this through the down to this organization, and I am here for it.
All right, let's pivot off of Black women's hair politics.
Yes.
To I have two things I want to talk about. I will be quick, but there is this show on the Oprah Network called Greenleaf.
Ooh, are you watching?
Oh, yes.
Ooh, yes! It
is essentially Empire at a Black church.
Oh, my God.
So sort of like prodigal daughter who used to be a very good preacher comes back, and there is some family shit that needs to be dealt with, and a sister who has just killed herself, and it is magnificent. It is the Oprah Network finally coming to play when it comes to prestige television. It was created by Craig Wright, who created Dirty Sexy Money and Tyrant. And so it is soapy, but also Craig Wright also trained to be a minister. And so there is this like, the thing is you keep expecting it to sell out religion and sell out the notion of a church and say, oh, it's just a business, it's all money. And it's lovely because it says it's a business and it's money and it is people's souls. It is the commitment of good people. And it is so wonderful. And Lynn Whitfield, who you may remember from Eve's Bayou, who is one of those magnificent Black actresses who we don't have proper uses for, we have found a proper use for.
Yes.
And she is terrible in the like awesome, best kind of terrible. And in the trailer for the season, she says to her sister, played by Oprah, she refers to her as, you childless whore. And it's like to Whoa. Look in Oprah's face and do that is like magnificent. So everyone should be watching Greenleaf. But I also want to say, because we do kind of have to talk about it in a pop culture sense, but my other thing I am all about this week is an article by former leader of the Liberal Democrats in the UK, Nick Clegg, from the day before Brexit, saying, if you vote for this, this is what will happen. And like the prophecy cast at Cersei when she was a teenager, 80% of it just immediately came true, and everybody's just waiting for the other 20%. Like, it was this guy who kind of got, like, in the last election, his party went from, like, 60 seats to, like, 8. He had to resign from leading his party. And then after this, in this huge sort of, like, power vacuum where the conservatives have lost their leader, the Labor Party is probably going to lose their leader, this one guy is, like, some badass, like, leadership. Mm. But it's the person who's, like, least positioned to be able to be in
like
charge.
Like Chris Rock running for president in head office.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But the thing is, theirs is a system where that could maybe work. In America, it just never does.
We need our sister show, Political Rocket, to explain what happens if Parliament decides that they don't want to invoke Article 50, in which case... Like, I don't know.
It's not.
They,
like,
took a vote, but the vote is not legally binding.
It's not binding. All power in Great Britain rests in the three branches of Parliament: House of Commons, House of Lords, and the Queen.
Right. So if they just say, you know what?
Nah. Yeah, that's absolutely a possibility. And
the Queen might be like, let's shake it up.
Honestly, I feel
so
like.
So was that just like a giant poll? Like, what the hell was
yes,
that?
Yes, it was essentially just a giant poll because they thought it would get shot down the way that Scottish separatism got shot down, and they were wrong. And now Scotland may vote again and leave.
Although they narrowly won.
Yes.
Like 51% or 52. Something, right? 52.
And it really was an interesting situation where neither of the parties really took strong leadership on it. And it was really interesting how much cultural figures were the ones who were stepping forward and saying, like, we need to stay in Europe, and how much more that resonated with young people than it did with older people. So it is very fun for me to watch their government meltdown.
Is it very weird that, or it's just super, like, snooty American that the first thing I did was go to ASOS after I watched David Cameron step down?
What is ASOS?
The shopping site.
No, that's beautiful. What, that's beautiful.
It was down. British?
Like,
ASOS is cute.
ASOS, thank you. Yes. ASOS is cute, but they shut the site down for 2 days.
I mean, the pound's worth nothing. Let's plan trips.
That's what I'm saying. Pop Rocket goes to London, it'll be just like Friends.
Oh my God, it's the only way I can afford it now.
All right, you guys are listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back to talk about weddings after this.
Ty is a pedantic person. I think when he pronounces these words, it's in a very show-offy way. Gyro.
Gyro.
Sacre bleu.
Sacre bleu.
Ayers Rock.
Uluru.
What you are witnessing is real. The participants are not actors. They are actual litigants with real cases. They call in via Skype to Judge John Hodgman's court, the real people's court. Now I call you to Judge John Hodgman's internet court. Find it at MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Winter Mitchell.
Margaret Wappler.
And Oliver Wang.
Margaret Wampler, do you have an update for us on Pop Rocket Summer Book Club?
I do indeed. So we had originally planned to talk about Sleeping Giants this week, but we're going to push it back one more week to give everyone a little more time to finish the book. So I will be putting up a thread soon on the Facebook page asking you guys for your smartest commentary, which we will quote from. So get ready.
And by people time to finish the book, she means me. I have not responsibly
and me.
Done my job. So, you guys, it is the summertime wedding season where we are all having to go to a lot of weddings. How many weddings has everyone been to thus far this year? I'm at 2.
2.
0.
0.
All right.
Last year, 2.
I got 2 more
oh,
coming.
Oh, really? Winter, what are you gauging? What are you feeling in the air wedding-wise?
Theme or length of marriage?
No, I'm talking about the activity itself. I want to only talk about the, like, 7 hours to 3 days of wedding. And what are you? Edison bulbs, barns? Like, what are we?
You know, barns. I've been to a lot of barns. I've been to a lot of like makeshift industrial type scenarios.
Yeah.
Which I'm for.
Yeah.
If unless I fall and bust my head on something.
Kooky in the city. Kooky in, yeah. In the city is like a fun way of going these days.
I'm going to one in Columbia in December, which I'm really excited
that's
about.
Exciting. That's exciting.
I will be DJing a barn wedding in October.
Nice. Oh, I don't know how you fit in there.
How do you adapt your traditional style to the barniness? How do you let the barniness flow in?
It's mostly just logistics in terms of where do I put the equipment, like next to the barn, like where's the power by the barn.
But like atmospherically, you don't let that isn't reflected in your musical choices?
What, like I'm going to bust out like a bunch of fiddle music? No.
I don't know, but maybe.
Get a square dancing track.
Like
no.
Just a taste of it, just a taste of
it. I mean, if the couple was into it, maybe, but I don't think that's what they want.
Margaret, what about you? What is your sense of wedding?
I love weddings. Mm-hmm. I love going to any kind of wedding. I will pretty much go to any wedding that anyone invites me to. Just telling you that, listeners, if you want to send me an invite, I'll probably go.
Dimitri Portnoy, we saw you just last week at Lake Arrowhead, and I demanded an invitation, which you don't have to give me, but you should give me a plus one for Margaret.
I think that weddings, it's like getting to peek into people's private lives and the way that they want to express themselves emotionally, and that is like, especially for a novelist, that is gold.
Yeah.
Like, you don't get to see that kind of thing from even like your close friends all the time.
Well, the interesting thing about it is that it is theater and production by non-professionals.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
And so it is really interesting, and especially now, like with a ceremony itself, I've long maintained that once you scrape all the patriarchy off of it, there's almost nothing left. Like, so many of the weddings I go to are just like three poems, a selection from a gay marriage case, and then and then we've got drinks in our hands. Like, it's really hard. And when you go to like an old school, like, Catholic ceremony where you have some, like, real, like, bells and whistles and magic, you realize it does feel like more of a thing. And if I were somebody who were raised in one of those traditions, you know, it's like last weekend I went to a Reformed Jewish ceremony, but one that still had, you know, seven blessings and all of that stuff. And it's a very different experience than "This is why I like you" in possible poem form, you know?
I don't know where I was trying to pick up on that, but I didn't.
What do you mean?
I was trying to pick up, find something jokey to say, and then I couldn't fill the gap.
What do you look for in a ceremony? Do you want a ceremony to be as quick as possible? Do you want it to be heartfelt? What do you want?
You need to be quick.
Yeah.
Because the thing is that I don't want to be there for 40 minutes. I don't want to be there for 40 minutes.
I want speeches. I want crying. I want music.
You want Corinthians.
I want no. It sounds like you guys have just been to bad weddings.
Okay.
Like, you just need to have heartfelt speeches and like real fucking communication with the people there.
Two things about ceremonies. First one is, a couple of years ago, I went to a lesbian wedding in Napa where we were sitting in the herb garden where the herbs were being picked for the dinner we were about to have as the ceremony was going on.
That's full on.
And that was like pure lesbian witchcraft. That was, we have two uteruses. We are so generative. We can make a person now if we need to. But wedding I went to last week, very nicely done. A lot of money was spent on it. Hotel in West Hollywood. And you know, Jewish magic. But not those speeches. And I was so missing them because I wanted
the big speeches.
That like gush of personhood, you know,
mm-hmm.
like that look in. And it is so cool to go and like spend a weekend meeting your friends, grade school friends, or the people they went to college with. And it's such.
Oh, you talk to those people?
Interesting perspective. Yes, I try to learn as much as I can about them. Oliver, what was your wedding like?
It was the caveat I'd begin with is we got married about 100 days after Ella was born. So when you are parents of a newborn, weddings really matter very.
Scandalous.
It's 2016, people. Jesus Christ.
What was the year you got married?
That was 2005.
Things were really different.
Yeah, it was.
Post 9/11.
Whole different era. So at that point, all the kind of basic sentimentality and symbolicness.
So it was pretty much an entourage. It was an entourage themed wedding, being 2005.
Yes.
You dressed like E. Sorry, I was being an asshole.
But I mean, whoever thinks a wedding is about virginity now, anyway? Like, well, that's absurd.
Post 9/11.
I just meant in terms of from a sentimental point of view, the ceremonial aspects. I mean, number one, neither of us would have wanted that under any circumstance, let alone when we're basically sleep deprived and new parents. We got married mostly because I was about to run out of health insurance, and the only way we could get health insurance is if I married the woman who had health insurance. I mean, that's really what it was. I was and
so romantic.
I know. Jesus.
Here's the thing. Sharon would have been happy with just going to City Hall and knocking out that way. I actually wanted a party because I wanted to have friends over.
Yeah. Yes.
And so what we did, and I don't know why more people don't do this, is we had our own wedding, which was just friends. It was a potluck in my friend's backyard. It cost us $300. We only invited the people we really wanted to and our immediate family and nobody else. And then a week later, we let our respective parents do kind of a more conventional wedding banquet where all the extended family that we really didn't want to be at our own wedding could show up at and therefore fulfill the obligation. Right? And I'm like, the two-stage wedding to me is genius. I don't know why everyone doesn't do it.
I'm going to do some name-dropping for just a couple of moments. First of all, Ali Wong, who we have discussed on this show, stand-up comedian, eloped but then had the necessary banquets so that she could then demand gifts from her
that's what it's about.
Her parents' friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like we, her friends, none of us experienced her wedding in any way. She just showed up to the Punchline in San Francisco wearing a wedding dress, but then she still had to do two or three banquets to make that happen. About virginity, comedians Moshe Kasher and Natasha Leggero had a super deedle-deedle Jewish wedding, like, because he's very Jewish and
his name is Moshe.
And then afterwards they went off and then appeared at the top of her house with a large sheet with red paint on it. And it's smeared in red paint.
Oh,
she's a virgin. In sort of homage to the fact that so much of what's traditional Jewish, like...
Right, what's the name of that whole thing that's supposed to, like, there's supposed to be, like, the 5 minutes that the couple spend right after the ceremony?
Yes. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But it is, like, you're supposed to inspect her beforehand to make sure that you're getting the goods that you contracted for.
Oh, yeah.
And then
you're
supposed to take her off and, like, deflower her there.
Right.
So it was wonderful.
Seal the deal.
Moshe and Natasha just had a very New York Timesy write up about their wedding. Do you love those or do you hate those? Because there was one that was sort of like went viral as like these are the tweeest people on the planet.
He put Jesse, it on the Facebook page.
Jesse Thorne got very defensive about people bashing on it.
Talk to me about that.
Well, I mean, I don't. It was who was he was like the great grandson of.
The Sound of Music.
Oh, the Sound of Music,
right?
Yes. Yeah.
And he's like a theologian, and his wife is a theologian, and they're in graduate school, and they had like 15 musical numbers in their wedding. I'm not exaggerating, which sounds insane.
They love books, and their love of books brought them together.
The announcement did not probably do them favors, but, and again, Jesse wanted to argue that it's not them, it's the reporter who frames it, but whatever. It just didn't do him favors.
Who's sort of working in a genre that was built 50 years ago, and we try to update it, but is that a relic of a bygone time?
No. I think that you should have, love makes the world go round. So reading about someone's union and them coming together and finding one another and feeling so compelled to tell the world about how much they love one another is beautiful. But it's like, I don't need a blow by fucking blow, Von Trapp.
Well,
I mean,
one thing that's interesting.
I thought they sounded adorable. And I thought that the blogger who wrote about them was just filled with hate and spite.
Oh, that was harsh.
In the article, that person was just like, and listen to this. I hate it. I mean, that's just like, what's
probably
the point?
And
it was all like a subcultural criticism. It was like, you don't like the same music that I do, so I hate you.
Margaret, talk to me about the role of Pinterest in how that has made the wedding culture of today.
Oh, God. Well, when I was looking through, I don't know, when I was trying to pick a dress, for instance, for my wedding like 3-4 years ago, and I would just like get ideas and I'd start Googling things, and then you land on some crazy person's Pinterest page where everything is like perfect and they've made their own tablecloths and their own plates. And they're like, look, the tablecloths only take like 5 days to make, you know, and you just like get this gold spray. And it's like, who the fuck has time for this stuff? And it drives people crazy. It makes them feel like if they don't actually now, I think like weirdly, like DIY culture is like more oppressive on yes. weddings than like anything yes. else.
My friend Sarah got married a couple of weeks ago and she went to a very out of a box. You just pay money and they take care of it.
Yeah.
But it was the most Edison lights, mason jar wedding, because that's what conventional wedding is now.
Yeah.
So this brings up, I think, one of the things that I was really dwelling on in knowing that we're going to talk about weddings, which is that, number one, it is by far probably the most ubiquitous representation of any kind of cultural ceremony or ritual that we see in pop culture. I don't know what would yeah. even come close to second. And number two, it invokes such passionate opinions in both in terms of like heartfelt, gushing, like most amazing thing I ever went to, and fuck those people. And I can't, again, birthdays don't quite inspire the same thing. Like births, deaths, no. But weddings really just work people's nerves in a particular way. I find it really fascinating.
Before we yeah. pivot to weddings in pop culture, there are really two things about pop culture of weddings. And one of them is the notion of perfection and true love, and this will last forever, which is what that institution was built for. And the second one is
built for property and
yes,
you know. But
the second one is dance music. So to take the first one, this thing is still built to say we're going to be together forever and we have the most perfect love, and it's sort of what those New York Times announcements are about. But also, everyone gets divorced,
right.
and we understand now that a wedding is hard work. And anytime I'm going to gay men's wedding. Like, I know it's maybe not going to be about monogamy, that it is going to be about other things. And so how do you feel about the continuation of that they have the sweetest and truest and most perfect love?
I'm a person who was married, had a beautiful wedding, and got divorced. I had a first marriage. And I would say that I don't regret a single thing I said or did about that wedding. And I think partially because weddings on some level are about the moment and the relationship you have in that time.
Yeah.
Like you cannot predict what's going to happen. No one can predict. And that doesn't desecrate the wedding. Like in actuality, like there's something really special about the fact that we feel so passionate and moved that we risk it anyway.
So guys, yeah. your point that like it that. That weddings trigger our hater point or our hater trigger because we find the kind of built up expectation, not about just the event itself, but the symbolism surrounding it, it strikes us as kind of false and overbaked.
It's so sincere that it verges towards camp.
Mm.
And that's a really interesting thing as a gay guy, because I had such a long period of time of assuming that solemnized relationships would not be something that I would have access to, and like and had that sort of conventional for many gay guys view of like, that's stupid. You love someone as long as you love them and then you whatever. But as time has gone on, I've realized that like solemnization and having that day where you do say all of that stuff, so you do have that nice memory and all of that, is really cool. And making it awkward, like looking at someone and being like, well, if we break up, this is awkward because we have to decide who gets the fish poacher and we have to tell all of these people who bought a fish poacher for us mm-hmm. that we're breaking up. All of that is really cool. I just want... I super want gay guys to figure out a culture for our weddings that is not your culture of weddings and can sort of embrace the camp a little bit and sort of like dance around.
But the thing you just said about it like being my culture, and you're pointing towards like a hetero woman, right?
Yes.
And that's not mine either.
Uh-huh.
Like I feel like that's been put upon me as much as anyone else.
Yeah.
Like that's part of the reason. I mean, we're going to move into talking about wedding movies in a second, and I barely have ever watched a wedding movie because they fucking drive me insane. I don't know who those women are.
But you love weddings.
I know, because real life weddings are way more interesting than any movie has really ever done. Except for like 3 or 4 movies.
You've gone to some really good weddings.
That's a great point. All right. Last thing of culture in weddings. The oldest question, DJ or band?
DJ, for sure.
DJ.
What the fuck you think I'm going
to
say?
Okay, here's the thing, is that I am a solidly DJ person because I want to hear the songs that I want to dance to. But I feel like it is an East Coast thing, and I feel like a lot of that is Jews needing to have our 4 ritual songs played so that we can hold up people in chairs. Like, the part of the wedding I was at last weekend that, to me, was like the
bands are an East Coast thing?
Bands.
Okay.
Bands. Because like I held up Joel Rubin on a chair when he got married, like made me feel like I had done my job.
Yeah.
And for a long time I felt like they were inferior quality, but I experienced two really good wedding bands in the recent past.
I just want to note that I just made a Hora mega mix for the Hora at a Jewish wedding I'm doing later this summer.
Oh, that's very exciting.
Nice.
If people were interested in this, who were listeners, how would they get a hold of it?
Oh, the mega mix or like tickets to the wedding?
The mega mix, not tickets to the wedding.
I'll ask the couple. It's a lesbian couple, which makes it even more cool. I'll ask them if they'd be okay with me sharing it.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about weddings in culture. What is everybody's favorite representation of a wedding?
Mine are Very Bad Things, which is a Cameron Diaz movie and Jeremy Piven's in it somewhere. The Best Man.
And Very Bad Things is a bachelor party.
Oh, yeah. It's a bachelor party. Like, the wedding is like a complete shit show at the end. Spoiler.
Yeah.
It came out 20 years ago, so deal with it. It's really funny.
It's kind of like a darker version of The Hangover. In that a woman is killed.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly it. It's to me, I really love it. Low budget. It's really funny to me. The Best Man, that's Taye Diggs and Sanaa Lathan, and that's Nia Long and an assortment of wonderful, beautiful black actors.
I mean, the period of time when if you were making an upscale black rom-com, you got yourself Sanaa Lathan. I miss that point in time.
I miss that point in time, too. She's got a show coming up this fall, but she's another severely underused woman in film. And then Steel Magnolias. Because, Jesus, wedding at the beginning is literally the first 30 minutes of the movie.
Yeah,
and the hair salon scene.
Blush and bashful.
Like, we
don't respect that as a wedding movie enough. And really, that it celebrates that, like, getting ready for a wedding kind of.
But the southernness of it all is that it's so, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Where it's just so southern and deep, deep. Not even deep south, but like deep south
curlers,
ritual.
Curlers, that's the word that you're looking for. It's all about curlers and like a big hair dryer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Margaret, what about you?
Well, I love Rachel getting married because...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. First of all, Anne Hathaway is amazing in that. And it is a movie that to me embodies what I was just talking about. That like very rarely do you see the complexity of real life weddings in movies. Like, and this captures it pretty well. Where there's an addict coming into the wedding ceremony, and she is like the person that you don't want at the wedding. And normally that story is never told from their point of view.
The speech where, like, the speech at the rehearsal dinner where she makes it about her.
100%
A thing
about
that
her.
We have seen in real life so many times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like everybody knows the Anne Hathaway character, like, where she's just so narcissistic and, like, yet at the same time, like, you feel bad for her and there's something beautiful about her and it's just confusing and complex. And, like, just seeing that the family, like, I don't know. It's just one
they
of those
rally
movies,
around
they
her.
Rally around her and it captures to me the kind of complexity of the family, both like going into these really happy moments, you know, like where everybody's like crying and celebrating and like having a competition about the dishwasher and then like having these like kind of brutal family fights.
Yeah. I never thought about this before, but I'm going to, for a brief moment, speak well of Ricky and the Flash, which is a rare activity. But I hadn't thought about the way that Anna Deavere Smith's blackness is used so interestingly in Rachel Getting Married to emphasize that this person is in this family, but not of this family.
Mm.
And they do something so similar in Ricky and the Flash, where Audra McDonald is the stepmom who, like, knows enough to understand this child and care for this child in the way that, like, the absent asshole mom has not. And, like, both of those performances are so wonderful. Possibly the only thing I liked about Ricky and the Flash. But, Margaret, talk to me about Rachel Getting Married versus Margot at the Wedding.
I haven't seen Margot at the Wedding.
Real?
I know.
It's very off-brand for you, Margaret.
I know. And I almost watched it today because I threw up on Facebook. I was like, what should I watch for wedding movies? And somebody suggested that. And I was like, yes, I should watch that.
But your point about trying to get in some way at the reality of a wedding is really interesting, which is why my pick is Monsoon Wedding, is sprawling and gigantic and has that sort of Altman-y feel. Like, Mira Nair really gets the Altman-y feel. All right, why are you Oliver is making a face.
I liked Monsieur Wedding. It was one of the first films me and Sharon went to together when we started going out. But Altman-esque?
Altman-esque in that you are going in and out of conversation. That conversation is constantly happening. And you're hearing clips of various things. And that you have a gigantic number of stories happening at all times. There are like five romances that are effectively dealt with in that. And you get a magnificent shit show of a Punjabi wedding. And as somebody who who grew up with...
I can taste the chicken tikka masala now.
Yes. As somebody who grew up with Punjabi weddings, like, again, Oliver is making face.
You got to explain this as someone who's not Punjabi.
Yes. Okay. So my little town in Northern California has a crazy large population of Punjabi Sikhs. So for me...
Interesting. I did not know that.
For me... Seeing marigolds meant, like, roses. It was like, all right, like, something's going on. And things like having a mehndi ceremony, like, showing a mehndi ceremony where ladies sing the sexy songs and stuff like that, that, like, teach a girl about what sex is going to be. Like, having that alongside all of these very, like, savvy internet age kids who, like, have experienced it all was just so wonderful. And I thought that it... being a gigantic movie in the way that it was, managed to earn all of your sense of belief and commitment to these relationships. That, like, at the end of it, you really were like, oh, that's, like, it felt overripe with love in a way that was wonderful. Oliver, what about you?
I think I'm like you. I like messy weddings depicted in pop culture. I do not want to be in a messy wedding, let alone DJing a messy wedding, but I love seeing weddings kind of fall apart. And so the examples that came to mind were certainly... I mean, The Graduate, at a point at which someone is swinging across to basically rescue someone from the altar. Like,
such a good scene.
Right? I had another pick, but literally what popped into mind listening to all of you was Charlotte's second wedding in Sex and the City when she marries her divorce lawyer. And basically it's the wedding where everything kind of goes a little bit wrong. Like, they can't break the glass. Like, yeah. It just won't break and things catch on fire. And I just sort of love the little... comedy of that. I mean, the point being is that, you know, just because your wedding isn't good doesn't mean your marriage won't last. You know, that was the after school special message about it. But I always really like that in terms of depictions of weddings in Sex and the City, of which there probably were like 18 weddings in that show.
Well,
can I go back to The Graduate for a minute?
Yeah.
One of the favorite things for me about The Graduate is that moment that they're on the bus where escaped.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you see them being like, oh, shit,
what have we done?
Yeah.
Which has been ripped off so many different times since then.
But it's like a very important moment about the wedding.
Because
it's like, no matter what, that's always a sense in it somewhere where it's just like, whoa, 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 what happened?
What did we do?
Yeah.
Well, it's wonderful to watch The Graduate as an adult and realize that it is a hilarious movie about how stupid children are and about a resourceful woman who is just trying to make life in Pasadena interesting for herself. But Oliver
She ran out of gin and tonics, and that's what you got to do.
Oh, she's the best. Oliver kind of makes this point that weddings are such well-trod territory for especially like female targeted comedies, and you do have this like Bride Wars and 27 Dresses and these very sort of like
bridesmaids
wedding saturated stories that are trying to get at what women find funny but also what women find aspirational. And do you find them relatable or terrible or both?
I mean, I'm the only single female in here. I
still find it terrible, but go on.
I know. I was just going to say, like, I've never been the kind of girl that dreamt about her wedding, because I just am very not optimistic about love as a prospect. We've talked about this. So I think I was much more fantasy driven when I was a younger woman. But now that I'm older, I find that narrative that we keep bringing, I find it gets getting a little old, because so many people's version of commitment has evolved over the last few years that I don't know why. I actually was thinking that we had a whole episode about rom-coms, and I feel like the death of the rom-com, the female-centric rom-com, is because, you know, those big budget movies, My Best Friend's Wedding, and any movie, you know, that requires that to be the focal point in some kind of really constricted, like, scenario occurs where there's your best friend or it's somebody else's husband or there's a long-lost love. You know, those things are just – has been well-trodden territory, and I just feel like we should move on to, like, a new version of what that – that's why, like, when J-Lo did the movie where she had a baby by herself.
Oh, you're talking about the one where she was a housekeeper.
No, that's Made in Manhattan.
Made in Manhattan is an amazing film.
Wing Wing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The Man Who Gave Us the Wedding Banquet.
That's Ang Lee.
Oh. Oh, sorry.
Guy.
I'm dying to talk to you about My Best Friend's Wedding.
Okay.
Because
oh, yeah.
I rewatched it today. And, okay, when I first saw it in 1997, I fucking hated it.
Okay, like, talk us through this.
I literally almost walked out. I went to see it with my mom.
Plot synopsis for people who can't remember all the way
Basically, Julia Roberts plays this food critic, and she made this pact with her friend. What's his name? Mulroney?
Dermot Mulroney.
Yeah, yes. Dermot Mulroney.
It was either Dylan McDermott or Dermot Mulroney. I don't know.
Irish name. She makes a pact with him that they're going to get married by 28 if they haven't found anyone. And he calls her 3 weeks before she's going to turn 28. And he says, hey, I met someone and we're getting married. And I really want you to come out to the wedding to hold my hand and help me through it. And he's getting married to Cameron Diaz, who is this like 20-year-old, like, twin set little princess and pearls, and Julia Roberts is like, oh no, I'm gonna stop this, and I'm gonna get this man, I'm gonna marry him. Okay, here's why I hated it, is because Julia Roberts is a fucking beautiful, sassy woman who makes a moron of herself for like 90 minutes over and over and over again. So I can't relate. I'm like, why are you doing this for this average fucking dude? Like, he's
pretty hot.
I mean, see it again.
But I also, but tell us about your conversion. You were walking on the road to Damascus. You were struck blind.
Yes. So I watched it today. And, you know, granted, I'm older. I understand somewhat the point a little bit more, in that we do things that are stupid and crazy for love. And we're often blinded by it. And we think, oh, that's the guy I got to get. And he's not. He's not the guy. But you'll sit there and do all these crazy things. But I still have to say that I don't find it that good. Julia Roberts is beautiful, and like, it is like prime time for her.
Jules is a wonderful character, and that she is so territorial. Like, that woman's
kind of butch.
Yes, she's like that. The end of that movie.
I love that about her.
She's totally
butch.
Probably
that she realizes she was the villain of that movie is just
so
wonderful, and that. It really did manage to feel champagne-y and bubbly the whole time. The thing I was wanting to say earlier to you is I just realized I don't think Nora Ephron, sort of the woman who remade the rom-com for the 90s, ever used a wedding, which is really interesting when all of these...
No, Sleepless in Seattle have a wedding?
No, they didn't have a wedding. They had it in Heartburn.
Oh, I mean, but Heartburn, she didn't direct.
Right.
And there are no weddings all over When Harry Met Sally, but...
Oh, are there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, never mind.
They attend a bunch of weddings.
Yeah. I was wrong. All right.
But she doesn't use it as a major plot device.
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
Let us talk about the shit shows. Let us talk about 27 Dresses.
Yes,
and I have gone back and forth with Pop Culture Happy Hour's Linda Holmes about 27 Dresses.
Okay.
Because
she's a fan, right?
Yes. Yeah. I believe the best criticism I ever heard of it was from my old writing partner, Chelsea Lately, Heather McDonald, who said after seeing the trailer, nobody has 27 best friends. She's like, and made the hard argument that if it were 9 dresses, it would be a better story. But I watched it again with some of my Katherine Heigl issues set aside, because I've watched too many.
That's very big of you. Yeah, I respect that a lot.
Because I fucking paid money to see The Naked Truth, or whatever it was called.
Right.
But it really is kind of a sweet story about somebody who bought in too hard to the wedding industrial complex and wants this perfection for herself and... doesn't get it. But also, 4 Weddings and a Funeral kind of does a better job of that when you get to the end and it's like, after all of those weddings and that funeral, they're like, we're not going to get married. We're going to be something else.
But the thing is though, that's not being that fair to 4 Weddings and a Funeral, because most of those marriages worked. Most of the marriages, 50% of the marriage, 70% of the marriages worked. Right?
Yeah.
75% of the marriages actually worked out, and those people were in love. And I loved when that movie came out, because that was the first time I saw on film a happy gay couple that wasn't running and hiding in fear in cloak of darkness. And that was that.
Is... To be fair, one is killed by the movie, though.
Okay, shit.
No, but they're fucking Simon Callow.
From his... happiness. Simon Callow was happy as fuck.
He was happy as fuck with a cute boyfriend. And it was great.
Can Hugh Grant be brought back for like a later life wedding? Can that happen to him?
I mean, it would
be the patriarch.
It would be wonderful. Is he going to be in the Bridget Jones movie?
No.
Oh.
No.
I'm sorry, Hugh Grant.
He's pulling a Will Smith move, which, right. You know,
oh, wait.
Considering...
He's the one who's like, I don't want to be in it?
Well, I don't think his character's in the book, but also, like, don't do that.
I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's talk about the concept of Bridezilla. And as a destructive concept, but also as a subject of parody.
Can I just... We're talking about Bridezilla as the show, right?
No, just the figure, the icon, the icon. The
I'm going to talk about Bridezilla's the show because this is my show too. Bridezilla's the show is one of the, if not best, representations of why we need to shut down this industrial complex, because these women on, you're allowed to have happiness and want happiness the way you want. To me, this the idea of hell is going to somebody's wedding in like, you know, the middle of Louisiana on like a Wednesday at a community center. Like I would, that to me is the idea of hell. Now, mind you, these women don't have these big budgets, but they are literally acting like they're getting married at like the Vienna Opera House. Like these women take it to such the next level that it's almost so uncomfortable that you kind of want the industry as a whole to completely just evaporate.
I mean, it's like, it's totally nice to be at those weddings that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars and where Veuve Clicquot is being thrown at you at every moment.
Right.
But when I see a movie from the 60s or 70s, like Heartburn is a really good example of like 40 chairs in an Upper West Side apartment and a rabbi.
Yeah.
And like that's that. And it maybe that feels sweet and it just feels like it's not an option in any way these days.
To do it on the low end. Like
oh,
that.
No. Yeah. I think it totally is. In fact, most of the weddings I've been to are like that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, I had 75 people at my wedding.
So do you feel like...
It wasn't a lot.
Do you feel like Bridezilla is a misogynistic caricature that we have created to call women frivolous?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, there's almost no way to other... How else can you look at it?
I mean, it's calling a bride a monster. I mean, that's literally the neologism right there. So, yeah.
I mean, I think it's also, though, talking about how women feel this incredible pressure to pull off the best thing ever.
Right. Yeah.
And it gets put on them. Like, even if the guy's involved, even if your groom is super involved, it's still on you.
And that expectation, I think, is fueled by pop culture because we see the pristine wedding thrown at us so many times.
I know, which
is
why...
It's completely colonized our imagination.
You have a show called The Bachelorette.
Yes.
Bachelor.
And I think like wedding movies, that's part of the reason why they always piss me off, because I feel like in a way that applies pressure back to society. Like I don't even know that like real people put that kind of pressure on each other. It's like movies do that.
And there is the porn element of these movies in that they are showing you that wedding done in a way that you can't do it. Like it's showing you optimal apex wedding and everybody's hunting after that, and it is fun to see them in the same way that like Busby Berkeley musicals showed you vaudeville that was bigger than vaudeville.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is kind of nice to watch weddings that are bigger than weddings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're the most opulent version in movies.
Yeah,
I've never been to a wedding like that.
And the thing I really do love wedding movies is that there is an intoxication underneath it, like. Again, when I realized that Bend It Like Beckham, however good it was then going to throw a Punjabi wedding at me, this time, thank God, a Punjabi Sikh wedding, I was like, yes, like we're just going to, like we're going to hit these excesses of joy, like that, you know, that sort of klezmery kind of, this is the one moment that we have to like... to be happy and celebrate life.
See, that's where I disagree, because I don't feel like we should put so much emphasis on this one moment where we all have to be happy in life.
Yeah.
I mean, I use weddings, especially destination weddings, as an opportunity to seek out new men to sleep with.
Uh-huh.
As you should.
Free food.
That's why people have destination
weddings.
Exactly.
Like,
I would get married
friends.
Again just to invite you. to my wedding.
Please. I'm like the best. And also, it's just like a nice time to gather around with your friends. But what I'm trying to take away from it, because I don't know when I'm going to be get married and I'm probably going to be an old ass bride, is I'm trying to take away sort of the power that's been given to me because of all these years of watching all this stuff just saturate. And not only like movies and television, we're talking about magazines. Magazine, the industry.
Oh, the magazines are almost worse than movies.
Yeah.
This just pushing that down your throat, the $1 million wedding, the celebrity wedding, the exclusive photos, the Brad and Angelina, the this
but
and the that.
In the same way that like
Jennifer Aniston, when are you getting married again, Jennifer Aniston?
Well, we all know that nothing makes me happier than an article about Jennifer Aniston being sad.
You got a lot of that last week.
Like, I was just going to say, like, I like holidays. I like heightened moments. And however much Christmas has gotten too commercial and all of that, I like that there's a special magical day that feels different. I like Passover for the same reasons, which are more personal. But I like that there is this space where, like, everybody's a little bit more relationship-oriented. And aunts are dancing in a way that they don't normally get to. And it really is this that in a very commercial age, when people are sort of like pushed into demographics and their behavior is controlled by demographics, it is this old school explosion of, yay, these two people are gonna fuck and it's going to make a baby or a figurative baby, and we all get to be happy about that. Oliver, what were you gonna say?
I don't think I can follow that, so I'm just gonna retract whatever.
Where's
I'd
the figurative baby in the middle of the room?
I'm gonna get one day. You're listening to Pop Rocket. We will be right back with our jams after this.
Podcasts. They're audio programs that
tell smart stories
in innovative ways
using editing techniques like this.
But let's face it, all that smart stuff can be exhausting.
That's where Stop Podcasting Yourself comes in.
It's so stupid.
It's just two stupid dinguses
being dumb idiot jerks for 90 minutes.
Stop Podcasting Yourself.
The stupid show that smart people love.
Find it on iTunes
or MaximumFun.org.
Welcome back.
Sorry.
That is the sound of Margaret Wappler gently
massaging.
I'm going to describe what she's doing to her microphone.
Hello.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Sky Branham. With me in the studio are
Winter Mitchell.
Sorry. Margaret Wappler.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Actually, that was good technique.
I'm Oliver Wang. It's getting very Asner in here right now.
It's a 10.
Every week on Pop Rocket, we ask our panel, what's your current jam? Oliver Wang, what's your current jam?
Well, I kind of threw this out as a alternative wedding option, which is the song that you never want to hear again at a wedding, which we don't need to listen to, and the song that you would want as your first dance song, if not the actual song. So for the song that I would probably stricken down, and it's a great song, I feel bad about it, but really Wedding Crashers ruined the song, for me at least, which is the Isley Brothers Shout, because it was so perfect in the movie, but I just don't ever need to hear it in an actual wedding again, because it's too much of a wedding song at this point, even though it's a fantastic song. So that would be Shout. So this is weird. When I got married, we didn't have any music at all, and we didn't have dancing.
What?
So there was no first dance. Had we had one, it would have been Joni.
Oliver, let's restage your wedding.
Okay, 3 month old. We had a 3 month old newborn. Okay. All the pomp and circumstance.
Ella's real cool, though. We've met her.
Yeah, she would have danced already.
We didn't have any music. But had we had a first dance, it would have been Joni Mitchell's All I Want.
I would have never thought you'd pick Joni Mitchell.
This is really Sharon loves Joni and loves Blue specifically, and she got me into it. And so in thinking about our relationship, to me, this would be, I mean, there's like thousands of first songs that I could choose, but this is the one to me that represents our bond.
Nice.
I love that.
I love that.
Margaret, what about you?
You know, for song that you don't need to ever hear again at a wedding, I picked an easy target, and that was the Here Comes the Bride. Like, all versions of it. Funky versions, rock versions, hip-hop versions.
Trap
like,
versions.
Yeah, witchcraft versions. Whatever you got, I don't want to hear it.
I like that there is a piece of Wagner that we play without realizing it's Wagner.
That's Wagner?
It's from Lohengrin, right?
Damn.
Or is...
I don't think it's Wagner. It's German.
You
it's
look at
Wagner.
Me like I know.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I don't think... I mean, can we look this up real quick? Because, I need to know if it's Wagner.
We're talking about, like, dun-dun-dun-dun, that joint,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, okay. It's either that or one of the traditional recessionals.
It's German, but I don't think it's
Wagner. That's from Wagner.
Yeah, at any rate, like, save your witch house version of Here Comes the Bride. And then for my own wedding...
It's Wagner.
Oh, shit.
Boom.
Guy, respect. Guy. I am sorry for questioning you. For my own wedding, I decided to, and I made this decision at 5 in the morning on the day that I was getting married. I decided that David and I would do our first dance to Neil Young's Harvest Moon. And the reason I picked this...
Great first song.
Yeah.
It's a great first song.
The reason I picked this is because we got married in October. Mm. It was a full moon that night. And we wanted something that every age in the house could get into.
Yeah.
So that's why we chose it.
I discovered this song because someone requested it as a first dance for wedding. I'd never heard it before.
Oh, really?
And I was like,
what?
I didn't listen to a lot of Neil Young. Sorry.
That whole album is really beautiful.
I'm sure it is. It kind of bums me out that he and his wife are divorced. But anyways.
I know.
Not the couple, the Neil Young. I mean,
Winter, what about you?
I hate Celebration by Kool and the Gang. Hate it.
Terrible.
Hate it.
Terrible.
Hate it. Don't want to hear it. We'll never play it at my wedding. The song that I want to not first dance to, because that's really too hard, and I'm sure it's probably going to be Drake if I get married by the time I'm 40.
How romantic.
If I'm after 40, it'll probably be something more traditional, like Reasonable Doubt. Just kidding. I don't know. I haven't thought that far ahead. It depends on who I marry. But I definitely want to walk down the aisle to this song. Tonight, Tonight by Smashing Pumpkins. This version. So if you listen to the lyrics of the song, the lyrics of the song is like, it doesn't matter what anybody else is thinking, how the world is behaving, whatever's going on. It's just us, you and me, tonight. Tonight. In love.
Good choice.
Margaret, I realize there is one version of...
Can you give my song a moment of rest to breathe? Shit!
Why didn't we hear... We didn't hear Billy Corgan, though.
No, I just want the... I want the piano
just
version.
Just the piano. Okay.
Margaret, I realize there was a version of the Wedding March that I will really ride for, and that is... Freddie Mercury on guitar doing it for the much-discussed Flash Gordon soundtrack.
All right, you make it hard to argue. Yeah.
I should not. Also, after I talked with so much effusive love about the Flash Gordon soundtrack, former guest panelist Riley Silverman bought it for me on vinyl.
Aww.
And it was very, very sweet. Song I never need to hear at a wedding again. I loathe the chicken dance.
Ooh,
I loathe all... dancing for people who don't want to dance music, like shy of the Macarena. I will allow you.
I was going to say, is the Macarena okay?
I will allow you the Macarena and beyond, but I feel like, why on earth would you give someone the chicken dance when I Want You Back by the Jackson 5 will do the work that it should be doing and get the right people on the dance floor? Here is some piece of vulnerability. However much you believe that you are able to root out your own internalized homophobia, I'm not a huge fan of two guys slow dancing together.
Oh.
It seems weird to me. I realize that I need to grow up because I was raised in a heterosexual world.
Interesting. So this is like some last vestige of like, I don't know if this looks right.
And I could be like, it would be very easy to like not admit to that, but I will admit to that because I am broken by the world that broke me.
Guy will change you.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about my mom and dad making out.
These are very rom-com sentiments that I would like to believe in, Margaret. So for song, I just wanted to, in addition to the fact that we are still on Summer Jam Search, I was really thinking about what song do I want to enter, like, what song from this summer do I want to hear enter, like, the rotation at weddings? And at the weddings I have been at, we've gotten that one Justin Timberlake song, which we still need to discuss. Cake by the Ocean has been very present, but I would like to see this nice lady enter the rotation. This is Lizzo with Good as Hell. I think that's what it's called. I don't know. Winter is not pleased.
This is not all. This is not four quadrants, I take it.
This is just a Kia commercial to
me.
God, she keeps ripping on you about these commercials.
I understand. I like a good time. all right. So the song was recommended by Joe Morgan on the thread for Summer Jams. Please keep recommending Summer Jams. You guys are introducing me to so much new great music that winter won't like. You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Branum, with Winter Mitchell, Margaret Wappler, and Oliver Wang. We post show notes every week at MaximumFun.org, and you can also find links in the episode description of the podcast. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Oh, and last week we threatened Margaret's life, and look at all
but
of the reviews
that
we have.
Feisty.
Let me just say, next week I will have her on top of a barrel of wildfire, if that's what it takes to get reviews. But we have, thanks to Jordan and SF, McSquiggly, Jimmy Pants, Manatee Girl 727, and Tanya Harding Jr.
Yeah!
Those are some good names for the 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you haven't already, please review us. It helps Margaret's health.
It really does.
If you've got an opinion you want to
share. Life expectancy more.
If you've got an opinion you want to share about this week's topics, you can join in the conversation on our Facebook group or tweet at us. We are at Pop Rocket. We are a production of MaximumFun.org, and our producers are Colin Anderson and the more experienced Christian Duenas.
Ooh. Oh.
Oh.
Is that too much, Christian?
It's fine.
Oh!
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.